The first plenary expansion of Krishna is Baladev, also known as Shesha. The Shesha incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead supports the entire universe, and the eternal mother of this incarnation is Mother Rohini. Because I am going into the womb of Devaki, the Lord told Yogamaya, the Shesha incarnation has already gone there and made suitable arrangements so that I may live there. Now he should enter the womb of Rohini, his eternal mother. In this connection, one may ask how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always situated transcendentally, could enter the womb of Devaki, which had previously been entered by the six asuras, the Shadgarbhas. Does this mean that the Shadgarbha asuras were equal to the transcendental body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The following answer is given by Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The entire creation, as well as its individual parts, is an expansion of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, even though the Lord enters the material world, he does not do so. This is explained by the Lord himself. Have you got that? Even though the Lord enters the material world, he doesn't. Okay, got your attention. This is explained by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 9:4-5. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham teshvavastita nacha matstani bhutani pashame yogam aishwaram bhuta brinnacha bhuta sto mamatma bhuta bhavanha. By me in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet, everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, myself is the very source of creation. Sarvam kalvidam brahma. Everything is an expansion of Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yet everything is not the Supreme Godhead, and he is not everywhere. Everything rests upon him, and yet does not rest upon him. This can be explained only through the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy. Such truths cannot be understood, however, unless one is a pure devotee. For the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 18:55, Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan yas chasmi tatvatah. One can understand the Supreme Personality as he is only by what? Only by devotional service. Even though the Lord cannot be understood by ordinary persons, this principle should be understood from the statement of the Shastras. A pure devotee is always transcendentally situated because of executing 9 different processes of bhakti yoga: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani Vedanam. Thus situated in devotional service, a devotee, although in the material world, is not in the material world. Yet a devotee always fears, because I am associated with the material world, so many contaminations affect me. Therefore, he is always alert in fear, which gradually diminishes his material association. So does that mean becoming a devotee of God makes you happy or unhappy? It seems from this that becoming a devotee of Krishna is to always be situated in fear that this world will somehow contaminate me and I'll forget Krishna. We hear that Krishna consciousness makes you happy. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. It's one of our slogans. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Prabhupada continue. A pure devotee, symbolically, Mother Devaki's constant fear of Kamsa was purifying her. A pure devotee should always fear material association, and in this way all the asuras of material association will be killed, as the Shadgarbha asuras were killed by Kamsa. It is said that from the mind, Marichi appears. In other words, Marichi is an incarnation of the mind. Marichi has 6 sons, Kama, Krodh, Lobh, Moha, Madha, and Matsarya. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, and envy. The Supreme Personality of God, it appears, in pure devotional service. This is confirmed in the Vedas. Bhaktir evainam darshayati. Only bhakti can bring one in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of God had appeared from the womb of Devaki, and therefore Devaki symbolically represents bhakti, and Kamsa symbolically represents material fear. When a pure devotee always fears material association, his real position of bhakti is manifested, and he naturally becomes uninterested in material enjoyment. When the six sons of Marici are killed by such fear and one is freed from material contamination, within the womb of bhakti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears. Thus, the seventh pregnancy of Devaki signifies the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After the six sons, Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Moha, Madha, and Matsarya are killed, the Sesha incarnation creates a suitable situation for the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, when one awakens his natural Krishna consciousness, Lord Krishna appears. This is the explanation given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Oma jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshuram militam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I'm reminded of a story where Srila Prabhupada one day in the class had told the devotees that a pure devotee can never fall down from Krishna consciousness. Never fall down from Krishna consciousness. And that's what it means to be a pure devotee. So then the next day he was standing in front of Radha and Krishna, a deity greeting, and he was praying to them. And afterwards, the devotee said, do you mind us asking what you were praying for, Srila Prabhupada? And he said, I was praying that I will never fall down from Krishna consciousness. So this, of course, bewildered the devotees who said, yesterday, you said that a pure devotee never falls down. Today, we've accepted you as the pure devotee, of course. You're the only one we know, and you're praying in front of Radha and Krishna that you will never fall down. How is that possible? If you're a pure devotee of Krishna, you don't fall down, so why do you need to pray? Etc. So Prabhupada said, yes, I am praying that I will never fall down, and therefore protected by Krishna. Wasn't that Bhagavat? What did he say? Words to that effect. So Prabhupada gives these instructions that one should always be thinking, I might fall away from Krishna consciousness. In fact, statistically, there's quite a good chance. Let me tell you this. Let's begin the class. Let us get it out in the open. Statistically, there's a very good chance that you may fall away from pure Krishna consciousness. Statistically, there's a good chance that you may never reach pure Krishna consciousness without doing these things. Firstly, praying for it. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has a similar take on it. He says that when Balaram killed Dhenukasura and Pralambasura, he said this is symbolic of what the devotee has to do in his own life. He said these two demons were killed by Balaram, but by praying to Balaram for strength, he said you have to remove these two demons from your heart. So what does he say? He says, Dhenukasura is the ass demon, of course, the donkey demon, who appeared in the forest of Talavan when the two cowherd boys, Krishna and Balaram, and all their cowherd boy friends wanted to go and eat the tal trees. Unfortunately, when you go to Talavan, the forest of tal trees today, the forest of date palms, there's one tree left. One date tree left. It's Kali Yuga. So one date tree only in the whole entire forest. So the donkey demons of Dhenukasura in Kali Yuga have been doing their work and cutting down all the trees in the sacred forest. So Dhenukasura, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, means ignorance of one's own spiritual identity, and that has to be destroyed by taking shelter of Balaram. Ignorance of the identity, the spiritual identity of the holy name. If you think the holy name is simply some syllables, then you are guilty of being on a level with the donkeys. And the spiritual identity of Krishna. Who is the identity of Krishna? Therefore, Prabhupada, in all of his purports, even to the point of our boredom, even to the point of our distraction, always suffixes the name Krishna with Krishna, comma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the tendency to forget that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so strong. So strong. And it does not matter whether you've been a devotee for one day, 10 years, or 50 years. The tendency will never leave you, because that is the original primal tendency, to forget Krishna's identity, and to forget the identity of the holy name, who is Krishna, and to forget your identity as belonging to Krishna. Ramanujacharya spends a very long time in his initial Sambandha Tattva explaining just the relationships of the soul to Godhead. And he says, Godhead is Adhari, and the soul is Adhara. Adhari, Adhara. One is the supported, and the other is the supporter. One is the controlled, one is the controller. One is the generated, one is the generator. Because if we get these basic facts right, then devotional service makes sense. If we don't get that right, then everything that we're doing becomes empty ritual. Empty ritual. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that these things one has to remove. Now, of course, how do we remove them? We remove them by the grace of Balaram anyway, who comes in the form of the spiritual master, who teaches us sadhana bhakti, how to remove the imperfections and how to restore perfection, which is there, our right. I see. If you if you talk to members of other religious orders, they will say that we are sinners. And we have to do something in order to become eternal. Well, the Greek word for eternal, from which comes the English word eternal, means that you are ever-existing, on and on and on into the future, but also back into the past, into the infinite past. And our understanding of eternity is that it always exists. That's a dictionary definition of eternity. You do not have to do anything in order to be eternal. You simply have to do something to remember that you are. So these donkey demons, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, have robbed you of your birthright. Furthermore, he says that on your way, after having got rid of those demons, on your way, there is the Pralambasura. And Pralambasura is another demon that was killed by Balaram. He was called the demon of separation. The demon of separation, Pralamba. One who separates, takes you away from your spiritual company. So he represents the things that will take you away from the Sangha of the Vaishnavas, who in themselves are restoring you to your spiritual position. So Pralambasura represents lust and greed for material things, pride, a very interesting one, pride. Pride can come at any moment. When one feels that, gosh, I'm proud, I should bow down to someone. So then you bow down to someone, and as soon as you've stood up from bowing down to someone, you think, God, I'm humble. Prabhupada said to Gurudas when he was his assistant in Vrindavan. And Gurudas came here in 1976 and he told me. So it was very fresh in his mind. He said, you know what Prabhupada told me in Vrindavan? He said, when someone calls you Prabhu, immediately you think, yes, please come here and wipe my shoes. He says, this is the tendency. That when someone addresses you as Prabhu, which means master, immediately you think, yes, I am. Now come here and wipe my shoes. He said, and Prabhupada said, we must remove that tendency. So pride, and when we see the six divisions of surrender, the six divisions of surrender as followed by all Vaishnavas, six manifestations of surrender, the six ways you know if you're surrendering or not. And the last one, humility, freedom from pride, feeling oneself to be nothing. It's not a mental adjustment. If you do it mentally, that's called lack of self-esteem, lack of self-respect, then it's a pathological emotional state in which nothing will happen. Devotional service won't happen, and self-service won't happen, and looking after a family won't happen, and getting a job won't happen. None of these things will happen. So that we're not talking about. We're talking about something that arises when there is genuine shraddha, genuine faith. See, genuine faith. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that even the six divisions of surrender, which we call sharanagati, they are the threshold of the door of the house of bhakti. It's just a symptom that you're beginning the process. So anyway, then he says, desire for worship and position. This will take you away from the Vaishnavas. So he says, in all humility, you have to pray to Krishna that these things are removed. He said, when you pray to Krishna, he said, Krishna doesn't come, but Balaram will come. Balaram comes and removes these in one step with his plow. Balaram is very powerful. You see, sometimes we think of, let's say sometimes I think, I won't make generalizations about all of you, but sometimes I think, or I try not to think, that, oh yes, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I think I've understood that after 30 years, 35 years of Krishna consciousness. I got that. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Did I get it? No, not really. But I think that I have. And then I see Balaram. You see. The tendency of a Kanishtha Adhikari is to look and see only one principle. You see. To look and see one God, one Guru, one deity, one movement. You see. We like this. It's very easy then. You see, then you can punch the air and you can champion a slogan or run through the streets shouting, you know, God is great, and you're an infidel. It's very easy to be a Kanishtha Adhikari. That's the point. Kanishtha means this, little finger. Each finger's got a name. A little finger is Kanishtha. It means the little one. So to be a little devotee, that's good. It's wonderful, actually, to be a Kanishtha Adhikari, but the capacity to hold on to many different conceptions. It's very interesting, actually. If you look in the dictionary, the word deity means the single source of all creation. Single source of all creation. Deity. Almighty God. On our open day here, we were bringing in people from around the area. And in the reception room, their first question was, who do you believe in at the Hare Krishna temple? And they say, oh, we just believe in one God, like you. And then they bring them into the temple room and they say, these are the deities, plural. So in one room I've said, we believe in the deity. Dictionary definition, the one supreme origin of everything. And then here in the temple room, the deities. You see, immediately you've confused people. But I thought you said that you don't believe in many gods. No, we only believe in one God. And this is Balaram. He's also God. And this is Ram. He's also God. You see. So people need a gentle introduction. And we need a gentle introduction. Because sometimes it's easy to think of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Balaram as a sort of supporting role. Some sort of, you know, if Krishna is the main actor, you know, there's the winner of the best supporting role goes to Balaram. But Prabhupada here explains that the Supreme Personality of Godhead pervades the entire creation. Maya tatam idam sarvam. He's everywhere. And by what energy does the Lord pervade all things? He expands himself. And then that expansion expands himself and expands himself and expands himself, forming the very, Prabhupada said, the warp and the weft of the universe. When you take a dhoti, you take a piece of cloth. Cloth is a concept that occurs when two things are in place. Threads going this way and threads going that way. But cloth is just a name we give when all the threads are in place. So Prabhupada said, when all the threads are in place, Sankarshan is going this way, Sankarshan is going that way, then we say reality. But really, it's all based on an expansion and an expansion of the Supreme Lord. When a young thug picks up a brick and he throws it through the window of a Curry's electrical goods store in a London suburb, the only reason he can pick up that brick, in fact, the only reason he knows that this is a brick and he can label something as a brick, the only reason he can pick it up and throw it through the window is because of Sankarshana. When he runs away from the police, the only reason he can run is that he's been given permission by an aspect of Balaram. When someone rugby tackles him, the fact that he goes down instead of up. When you rugby tackle someone, who used to play rugby? Give me a wave if you used to play rugby. The real men. Okay, who used to play badminton? There you go. So when you rugby tackle someone and they go down instead of up or sideways, that very principle of gravity is Sankarshan. So when we talk of Balaram, we're not simply talking of someone who killed Dvid, a gorilla, or someone who was the master of the mace, or someone who was avoided the battle of Kurukshetra. We have to understand that these persons who we feel sometimes very close to in our deity worship, in our prayer, sometimes we become so close that we may forget the greatness of God. And we may also forget that as far as God is the sweetest, Madhuram Madhurebhyopi, even the name of God is the sweetest of all sweet things. But in the sweetness, don't forget the greatness. Otherwise we shall end up a Gaudiya casualty, of which there have been many down through the centuries. Don't let the sweetness always dominates the greatness, but don't let your mind forget the greatness of God. And the reason to remember this is, of course, so that we do the things which Balaram himself came to teach, and Krishna came to teach. You cannot transcend the laws of God. Laws of God are there so that when you follow those laws of God, you become God conscious. Two types of laws of God. One is sadhana bhakti. That gives you access to Krishna. And the other is morality, ordinary morality, which sometimes we call mundane morality. But unless it's in place, your sadhana is not in place. And that's why Prabhupada, he asked his followers to promise at initiation, which many other teachers do not, to follow basic principles of morality: cleanliness, austerity, truth, and mercy. Now, Prabhupada could have asked, what are the four regulative principles? And the disciples could go, cleanliness, austerity, truth, and mercy. But Prabhupada didn't do that. He asked them to recite the supportive principles by which cleanliness, truth, austerity, and mercy would be established in their lives, because their tendency is to forget. So unless we remind ourselves that not only is Krishna the flute player that stands on the bank of the Yamuna, forever inviting the conditioned souls to be part of his rasa dance, not only is Balaram the wielder of the plow, who marries Revati, but they're also the lawmakers and the lawgivers to human society. And each Vaishnava also has to be a representative of God the lawmaker and God the enchanter. And then we can actually reform human society. Otherwise, it's very difficult. What does Krishna consciousness have to say about any practical problem that the world is facing? Well, Prabhupada actually said that we have the spiritual solution to material problems. Now, supposing you had just, 2 minutes in a lift with the Prime Minister, who was looking really puzzled as to what to do about all the problems that he's got. Could you give Krishna consciousness in a way in which would say, oh, that's a revolutionary idea? Because the Vedas do that. The scriptures do that. There's always two principles. One is personal emancipation. How are you going to go back to Godhead? That's one consideration. And you'll find that in Shastra. And then the other side of Shastra is, what can we do collectively to enhance our sorry position in this world? How can we make some progress in the human form of life? And how can we help others to make progress in the human form of life? And the solution for everybody is not to become a follower of Krishna, specifically a practicing Vaishnava, but it may be, at least, as Narada Muni says, at least kill the animals completely. So here you have Narada Muni speaking to Magrari the hunter, who was killing the animals half. At least what represents progress for you is kill them completely. You see? At least give a religious principle that will help a person to the next stage. And these twofold instructions we find in Shastra. So we are sitting to hear something about Balaram. And I wanted to, of course, Balaram's appearance is a prelude to the appearance of Lord Krishna. And it comes because of a question. It comes because somebody a long time ago, 5,000 years ago, was inquisitive as to why Krishna comes and why his brother comes. And in receiving the answer, he became very satisfied. And half of the Bhagavatam, almost half of the Bhagavatam, is the description of the Lord's pastimes in this world. What did they do when they came? So in the ninth canto, Parikshit Maharaj is asking this question. He says he's heard about the sun dynasty and he's heard about the moon dynasty, and now he wants to hear about his grandfather's best friend. His grandfather, Arjuna, his best friend, Krishna. He says, I want to hear about that person who saved me in the womb. Can you tell me something about him? And why does Krishna come to this world? You see. So the whole thing is set in motion, we hear, for four reasons. Firstly, it is the Lord's sweet will. And we've just heard how the Lord's sweet will, Lord Krishna's sweet will, is that Balaram comes before him. Second, to rid the world of demonic influence. To rid the world of demonic influence. Vinashaya cha duskritam. Then, dharma samstapana, to reestablish Dharma, and devotees to give them paritranaya sarunam, to give them relief from the demonic influences and to give them salvation. And finally, the Lord comes to display his leela. If Krishna does not display his leela, would we be interested? Would the Vaishnava saints have anything to talk about if the Lord does not display his leela? Would the Alwars have written so many nice prayers if the Lord does not come? Oh. So he comes for these reasons. And we hear the beginning of the narration. Everybody knows it. We're going to be hearing it in a week or so. It's almost like our Genesis, isn't it? If you know this, you know that. Once, when the earth was overburdened by the unnecessary defense force of various kings, etc., etc. So Bhumi pleads with Lord Brahma. And the Lord promises to come with his eternal associates. So there was a king by the name of Shurasena. And Shurasena, he was the chief of the Adus. The Adus were in that dynasty, the Moon Dynasty. And he lived in Mathura. And his son, Vasudev, was just married to Devaki. This is the very famous opening of the drama. From the very beginning of the Lord making his appearance in this world, it's dramatic. You could not get a better opening scene. On the very day of her wedding, when her uncle is driving her in the chariot, there's this thunder in the sky without any clouds. Then there's a voice. And the voice says that the child of your sister will one day kill you. And it's a very dramatic opening. There's 400 elephants, 10,000 horses, 18,000 chariots, and 200 serving maids. It's a big procession. So Vasudev manages to pacify Kangs, and every year Devaki faithfully brings her sons before Kamsa. Then Narada Muni, the agent provocateur, he goes to Kamsa and he says, "Wait a minute. Let me tell you something that you don't know." And kings, they're always willing to hear this intelligence from spies. So Narada Muni comes and he gives him some intelligence. He says, "Actually, in a previous life," and of course Kamsa's an intelligent man, he believes in a previous life. So he says, "You were a demon named Kalanemi, and you were killed by Vishnu. And these sons that she's been bringing to you should actually be killed." So here's Narada Muni, agent provocateur, doing something very strange, but which will ultimately hasten the appearance of Krishna and Balaram in the world. So then he begins persecuting the Yadu dynasty, all of them. So they begin to leave. They seek refuge. So the Yadu dynasty, they become refugees. They go to many different places. And Rohini, Balaram's mother, she goes somewhere else. So she goes with Nanda Maharaj. But why does Rohini go with Nanda Maharaj? Shurasena had married two wives. And one was a Kshatriya, and the other one was a Vaishya. The idea is if you marry again, the second wife should be of a lower caste than the first. And then the relationship between them will be one of respect. Hopefully. If you give them separate houses. And you spread your time equally between them. And I don't speak from experience. So Shurasena had married two wives. One was a Kshatriya and the other was a Vaishya. So the Kshatriya wife gave birth to a child called Vasudev. And the Vaishya wife gave birth to a child named Nanda. So this made Nanda Vasudev's stepbrother. Okay. I hope the English people are following this, because family for you, I know, means mum, dad, kid, and Fido the dog. But for our Indian devotees here, they can quite accommodate 26 degrees of relationship. So this made Nanda Vasudev's stepbrother. So later on, Vasudev married Rohini and then Devaki. Two wives. So Nanda married Yashoda. So it was quite natural for Rohini to go with Nanda and Yashoda in the absence of Vasudev. So Kamsa killed six sons. And when Devaki became pregnant for the seventh time, the Lord ordered Yogamaya to the womb of Rohini. And he told her, I will come as Devaki's son, and you will come from Yashoda. So Devaki appears to have a miscarriage. I just want to read a little bit. Reading one. Sorry, I will go and do that later. So then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur at this point comments that, and we just read this in the verse, that Balaram makes suitable arrangements for the Lord even within the womb of Devaki. And the Thakur explains that this event is analogous to the way the devotee makes progress. Devotee fears material association, and this fear successfully kills the six enemies. Prabhupada, at one point, he said that, he said two things. He said three that I can remember. He probably said more on different occasions. But he said, the only problem with my disciples... Four, actually. One, that they want to go to the heavenly planets. They want progress, but they want to go somewhere else after this life, but it may not involve Krishna. It may involve living in a world where there's eternal enjoyment, but it doesn't involve Krishna. See, the only problem with my disciples is that they give up business, and then after some time, they like to do business. He said, like the bed bug. He said, the bed bug in the winter, he said, when there are no, the bed bug in the Dharamshala, he said, when there's no pilgrims, he just waits. But as soon as the pilgrims start coming again, he jumps, bites, sucks, and becomes filled with blood. Prabhupada used these examples, he said. So just like that, he said, my disciples, they have given up business, doing business. He said, then when the time is right, again, they will go. Starting to do business, this blood extraction business. So then, on another occasion, he said, the only problem with my disciples is that they do not read my books. I have written these books for them, they do not read them. And finally, what I was getting to, he said that the only problem with my disciples is that they are not afraid of Maya. They have no healthy fear of the material energy. They think they can do anything, go anywhere, etc. So in these verses, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that fear of these six enemies paradoxically leads you to the conquest of those six things. How is that possible? If I'm afraid of something, normally that means that I can't conquer over it. But in this case, the fear leads to prayer, and the prayer leads to Balaram, and with his plow immediately vanquishes those. Then when those are vanquished, in comes Krishna. Krishna takes birth within the womb of your bhakti. A quote here from Jiva Goswami. Interestingly, Jiva Goswami was a great devotee of Krishna and Balaram from his childhood. We find in the Bhakti Ratnakara that Jiva Goswami had deities of Krishna and Balaram when he was a child. And at daytime he would serve them, and at night he would hold Krishna and Balaram to his chest and go to sleep with them. Now the parents thought that these are some you know, this is a childhood affection. They saw it as a childish thing, but actually he was manifesting his eternal proclivity as a devotee. So Krishna and Balaram, a great object of attention and meditation of Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami, later on, in his writings, he said that Balaram is an expansion of Krishna, and that part of Balaram is Sankarshan, from whom the successive Vishnus manifest. He, in that capacity, as Avesh Avatar, holds all the planets upon the hoods of Ananta. Sheshanaga, or the serpent couch upon which the Lord rests, is also he himself, as well as all the paraphernalia for service and the intention within the mind of the devotee to perform service for Krishna, that is Sankarshana. Yamuna Devi says, of course, there was a Yamuna Karshana Lila that Balaram used his plow to pull Yamuna closer. She says, "My dear Lord, you have extended yourself through the entire universe by one plenary expansion. It is not possible to understand you fully." One time, Prabhupada upstairs in his room was asked the question by a devotee, because Prabhupada was talking about Sankarshan and Mahavishnu and all the universes being generated from Mahavishnu. And the devotee asked him, "So how is it possible to understand that, you know, unlimited universes are being generated by Mahavishnu?" And Prabhupada said, he said, "You will never understand with your puppy brain." But of course, at the same time, then Prabhupada went on to give him the ability to understand. Srila Prabhupada explains that Balaram is the eternal expansion of the Lord. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is equal in supremacy to Krishna. Yet wherever Krishna appears, Balaram appears as his brother, sometimes his older brother, and sometimes his younger brother. In the case of Krishna Lila, he appears as his older brother. In the case of Ram Lila, he appears as his younger brother. So he explains that they appear within the Vaishya community, and this is why we see the Lord playing his flute for the cows, and Balaram is seen carrying the plow. Goraksha and Krishi Raksha. As they grow up, both the boys are the object of intense affection for their mothers. The mothers see their teeth coming in and count their teeth while they give them the breast milk. They watch them take their first steps. Sometimes Krishna and Balaram, they don't look up because they're little boys, little toddlers. They just follow somebody else with footbells. They think it's their mother. And then that person speaks and they realize that it's someone else, and then they run away. So let me read something to you, if I can. So Garga Muni comes. Garga Muni also has a lot to say about Balaram. We'll come to that a little later. After a short time passed, both brothers, Rama and Krishna, began to crawl on the ground of Raja with the strength of their hands and knees, and thus enjoy their childhood play. When Krishna and Balaram, with the strength of their legs, crawled in the muddy places created in Braj by cow dung and cow urine, their crawling resembled the crawling of serpents, and the sound of their ankle bells was very charming. Very much pleased by the sound of other people's ankle bells, they used to follow these people as if going to their mothers. But when they saw that these were other people, they became afraid and returned to their real mothers, Yashoda and Rohini. Dressed with muddy earth, mixed with cow dung and cow urine. The babies looked very beautiful. And when they went to their mothers, both Yashoda and Rohini picked them up with great affection, embraced them, and allowed them to suck the milk flowing from their breasts. While sucking the breast, the babies smiled, and their small teeth were visible. Any mother who has children and who have given them breast milk, you know this phenomenon, that when babies are given breast milk, they smile. How babies, they can suck and smile at the same time, or they suck, they take a break, they look, they smile, and they go back to sucking. And the mothers will understand this. And their small teeth were visible. Their mothers, upon seeing those beautiful teeth, enjoyed great transcendental bliss. Please note, these babies were not bottle fed. There was no milk formula available in the pasturing grounds of Braj. Neither was there any idea. But long past the teeth coming, they were suckled. We can learn a lot from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Within the house of Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd ladies would enjoy seeing the pastimes of babies Rama and Krishna. The babies would catch the ends of the calves' tails, and the calves would drag them here and there. When the ladies saw these pastimes, they certainly stopped their household activities and laughed and enjoyed the incidents. Now, to see little children being pulled everywhere by calves. Let's see. When Mother Yashoda and Rohini were unable to protect the babies from calamities threatened by horned cows, by fire, by animals with claws and teeth, such as monkeys, dogs, and cats, and by thorns, swords, and other weapons on the ground, they were always in anxiety, and their household engagements were disturbed. At that time, they were fully equipoised in the transcendental ecstasy known as the distress of material affection, for this was aroused within their minds. Sounds like a very dangerous place for children to wander around. I once saw a young child gored by a bull. It was in Spain, of all places. And the child was gored in the back after getting too close to the front of the bull. The child was all right. The child was about 7 or 8. And these are smaller children. So just imagine. And somehow, that being always in the distress of trying to protect our children made them completely, completely and utterly conscious of these children. But they were not ordinary children. O King Parikshit, within a very short time, both Rama and Krishna began to walk very easily in Gokul on their legs, by their own strength, without the need to crawl. Thereafter, Lord Krishna, along with Balaram, began to play with the other children of the cowherd men, thus awakening the transcendental bliss of the cowherd women. Okay, now they're coming to other people's homes. Observing the very attractive childish restlessness of Krishna, all the gopis in the neighborhood, to hear about Krishna's activities again and again, would approach Mother Yashoda and speak to her as follows. Here we have the beginning of the pastimes of Makanchora. Our dear friend Yashoda, your son sometimes comes to our houses before the milking of the cows and releases the calves. And when the master of the house becomes angry, your son merely smiles. Sometimes he devises some process by which he steals palatable curd, butter, and milk, which he then eats and drinks. When the monkeys assemble, he divides it with them. And when the monkeys have their bellies so full that they won't take more, he breaks the pots. Sometimes, if he gets no opportunity to steal butter or milk from a house, he will be angry at the householders, and for revenge, he will agitate the small children by pinching them. Then, when the children begin crying, Krishna will go away. When the milk and curd are kept high on a swing hanging from the ceiling, and Krishna and Balaram cannot reach it, they arrange to reach it by piling up various planks and turning upside down the mortar for grinding spices. Being quite aware of the contents of a pot, they pick holes in it. When the elderly gopis go about their household affairs, Krishna and Balaram sometimes go into a dark room, brightening the place with the valuable jewels and ornaments on their bodies, and taking advantage of this light by stealing. Finally, last verse. When Krishna is caught in his naughty activities, the master of the house will say to him, "Oh, you are a thief," and artificially express anger at Krishna. Krishna will then reply, "I am not a thief, you are a thief." Sometimes being angry, Krishna passes urine and stool in the neat, clean places in our homes. Hi, so that's a bit too much, isn't it? Should I read on? But now, our dear friend Yashoda, this expert thief, is sitting before you like a very good boy. That's outrageous. Sometimes all the gopis would look at Krishna sitting there, his eyes fearful, so that his mother would not chastise him. And when they saw Krishna's beautiful face, instead of chastising him, they would simply look upon his face and enjoy transcendental bliss. Mother Yashoda would mildly smile at all this fun, and she would not want to chastise her blessed transcendental child. Now, in all this, Balaram is the constant companion of Krishna. But because he's the elder brother, the relationship between him and Krishna is slightly different. And one can imagine that Balaram is sometimes even naughtier than Krishna, and sometimes he's the leader of the different cowherd boys. And sometimes he doesn't like it that Krishna gets all the attention. So one day, he plays a trick on Krishna. He tries to get his brother into trouble. One day, while Krishna was playing with his small playmates, including Balaram and other sons of the gopis, all his friends came together and lodged a complaint to Mother Yashoda. "Mother," they submitted, "Krishna has eaten earth." Upon hearing this from Krishna's playmates, in other places, Prabhupada says it was Balaram, specifically as the leader of the playmates who went and spoke to Mother Yashoda. Upon hearing this from Krishna's playmates, Mother Yashoda, who was always full of anxiety over Krishna's welfare, picked Krishna up with her hands to look into his mouth and chastise him. Her eyes fearful, she spoke to her son as follows. "Dear Krishna, why are you so restless that you've now eaten dirt in a solitary place? This complaint has been lodged against you by all your friends, including your elder brother Balaram. How is this?" Lord Krishna replied, "My dear mother, I've never eaten dirt. All my friends complaining against me are liars. If you think they're being truthful, you can look into my mouth and examine it." Mother Yashoda challenged Krishna, "If you have not eaten earth, then open your mouth wide." When challenged by his mother in this way, Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, to exhibit pastimes like a human child, opened his mouth. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is full of all opulences, did not disturb his mother's parental affection, his opulence was automatically displayed, for Krishna's opulence is never lost at any stage, but is manifest at the proper time. And of course, when he opens his mouth, she sees not only Krishna and his brother Balaram, but expanding from them, she sees all the universes, she sees the entire globe, she sees everything, all the different incarnations, she sees everything that can exist. And she's exhausted by this, and she faints away. How is it possible, within the mouth of my child, to see everything that exists and everything that could ever exist? Well, it's because your child is none other than the supreme origin of everything. Now, you see how it is Balaram that again brings about the opportunity for Krishna to manifest his true identity. And this is a theme that we'll see, both in the individual life of the devotee practicing sadhana, and also in the pastimes of the incarnation of the Lord. Lord Balaram serves his Lord and Master. Sometimes Krishna massages Balaram's feet, but sometimes Balaram massages Krishna's feet. Sometimes he plays as an elder brother, and sometimes he plays a submissive role. But he's always with him, and he's always allowing Krishna's pastimes to become manifest. Are we all right so far? You have enough in you for another 10 minutes? Well, that wasn't a deafening roar, but I shall. I just have a few notes left to go. But sometimes, in order to manifest this servitude of Krishna, and let us not forget that Balaram is he's the protector of the Vaishnavas. He's the protector of the Vaishnavas in his merciful form as Lord Nityananda, and in Nityananda's merciful form as the Guru. And so Balaram, sometimes he manifests this pastime of forgetting Krishna, forgetting who Krishna is. And specifically, it's on his birthday. So Balaram has a birthday, and on your birthday, you have Abhishek. Okay? Sometimes. Maybe you don't. But thousands of years ago, you had a special bath. And this was how you have a birthday. These days, we do all inauspicious things. Light the candle, light the candle. Blow out the candle, blow out the candle. Complete inauspiciousness. Then we decorate the home with balloons. Balloons filled with toxic vapor from inside the stomach, inside the lungs. Okay? Okay. So in this way, we are losing the ability to bestow auspiciousness on our children. When the rioters were going around London, some people, not only people in Tunbridge Wells, but some people were saying, "Where are the parents?" Well, I'll tell you where the parents are. The parents are not parenting. In fact, many parents do not have a clue what to do, how to bestow auspiciousness. Therefore, it is said, "Guru nasasyat." How does it go? Pita nasasyat, jana nasasyat, deva nasasyat. Don't become one unless you know what to do. And as I often say at weddings, don't become a husband unless you know what to do. Now, how do you know what to do? It is there in Shastra, but you'll have to take the time and trouble to go looking for it. How do I become a parent? Well, you have to go looking for it. Otherwise, you never know what you might find. It's easy enough to create a child, but looking after them until they attain the age of majority, that is a big, big thing to do. So please, I urge you, do not become a demigod unless you know how to control the wind and the rain. And do not become a husband unless you know how to control your wife. Do not become a parent unless you know how to control your children. Yes, control your children. What does that mean? Controlling a child simply means that you guide them. That's all controlling means. It doesn't mean that you beat them. It doesn't mean that you browbeat them. It doesn't mean that you pummel them emotionally or force them to understand how wonderful you are and how great you are. But it does mean that you serve them by allowing them to cultivate the two most important qualities that any human being can get, which, I may say, if you're looking for how to get through a job interview, these two qualities will also get you through the job interview. If there's two candidates, Prabhupada said, if there's two candidates for a job, and one man leaves the door open as he comes in for the interview, and another man closes the door behind him, the man who's closed the door behind him, he'll get the job. Prabhupada said it, I didn't. It's because they'll see, this man has character. He's polite. But the two qualities that you can inculcate into a child are respect and gratitude. Please train your children to say please and thank you. Very important. They should respect elders. Elders is easy. It means everybody else. And if we train our children in this way, then we won't lose them. Don't think, Prabhupada said, that the modern educational system is a slaughterhouse. He did say that, but slaughtering a child starts in the very home. You put a television into your children's bedroom. For God's sake, what are you doing? You're opening up the floodgates. You might as well stand your child in the floodgates of a sewer. Oh, but I'm giving my child freedom. Yes, giving your child freedom. Such freedom will create a monster. So in the past times of... pin drop silence in the room. Because somebody, I don't know who it is, has put a television in their child's bedroom. I don't need to know. But the pin drop silence is either you've done it or you thought about it. Yes, we can all buy a television. Yes, children want to watch television. But what are they watching? How are they developing respect and gratitude? The senses are so strong and impetuous that all they want to do is reach out and grab. Human life begins with the quality of restraint. Restraint means I want it, but I can't have it because I'm not supposed to. Unless you give your children boundaries, you're giving your children animal life instead of human life. That is Kali Yuga. That's where Kali Yuga begins, and that's how it continues. So here we have how to celebrate a birthday. Give your child a bath. Please, some of you parents, give your child a bath. But it's a special bath. A bath with milk and fruit juice, and it's a bath that everybody gets invited to up to a certain age. And in this way, you celebrate. You celebrate. What do you celebrate? You celebrate that up until this age, my child has been protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Let's have a kirtan. And I want to give my child Krishna. That's the best possible gift I could give my child. So Balaram had Krishna, but on the very day that most parents would choose to give their children Krishna, he didn't have Krishna. Krishna went far, far away with the cowherd boys, and the cowherd boys were stolen. They were stolen. Every mother's worst nightmare. My child has been stolen. Okay. A couple of days later, it's all over the Sun and the Daily Mirror, and everybody's looking. Have you seen this child? And on the Costa Brava, they were stolen. This is what they look like. 4 years later, this is what they might look like a year later. Okay, well, this happened. And who was the person who stole away? Not one child, not two, not ten, but dozens and dozens of them. In fact, all the children of the village. Who stole them? None other than Chaturmukhi Brahma, the four-faced Brahma, the engineer of the universe. He stole them away. Who is this Krishna? What is his power? So then, even Balaram was fooled. They came back at the end of the day, and he saw all these cowherd boys. Yeah, they went away. I missed a day out with my friends, but now they're back, and tomorrow I'll go out to the pasturing grounds with the cows, and everything will be as normal. And for 359 days, it was normal. But then one day, Balaram looked, and he looked, and he saw, you know, just recently, there's an extraordinary amount of affection between the parents of the village and the cowherd boys. I mean, every time the cows are running to them and the boys are affectionately embracing their parents. Sometimes the parents used to scold their children. There's no scolding anymore in the village. Parents' eyes are welling up with tears. You know that something's happening when children come home and your eyes fill up with tears and their eyes fill up with tears and they embrace and they don't want to... Something special is going on. Every day was like that. So Balaram was scratching his head and he was thinking, what's happening? What's different? And then he understood. And then he understood. It was revealed that Krishna had expanded himself as all the cows, all the calves, all the boys, and all their paraphernalia, their sticks and their flutes and their jewelry and their ornaments and their turbans. It was all Krishna. And then he showed Brahma. He manifested himself. He said, you may think I'm a cowherd boy, but just see. Pashame yoga maishwaram. Thank you. He said, just see. Just see. And all the Vishnus manifested from this little cowherd poem. So, Balaram understood, and then he understood that this is the Lord himself, the Lord's Yoga Maya. So many demons came, they were killed, and now it becomes time to develop the pastimes. The demons are going to be vanquished in three places. One is Vrindavan, one is Mathura, just outside Mathura in a place called Lohaban. And you can still go to this place today when different demons were vanquished. And in another place called, which other place? Krishna killed demons in Vrindavan, Mathura, and one very important place, at least. Kurukshetra, yes, Kurukshetra. So each time Balaram helped the proceedings, indirectly or directly. So you know this story. So Kamsa is frustrated that he can't kill Krishna and Balaram. He sends for Akrura. Akrura picks them up in a chariot. Akrura sees their footprints and he recites these beautiful prayers. Then, bringing them, he sees the inner identity of Krishna and Balaram within the water of the Yamuna. He sees the Lord on his Sheshanaga couch. So then Krishna punishes the washerman and rewards the tailor and the florist. He heals Kubja. He breaks the sacrificial bow, and he sort of breaks the sacrificial bow's caretaker, and he retires for the night. And the next morning he kills Kuvalyapida, and then he takes on Chanura, and Balaram takes on Mushtika. So, beloved of our Janmashtami guests, the fight scene between these little boys, Krishna and Balaram, and these huge Conan the Barbarian wrestlers, Mushtika and Chanura. So there are many pastimes, and everyone has their favorite pastime. The gambling match is one of my favorites, and Balaram really uses his club to great advantage in the gambling match. The killing of Dravida gorilla. We have the pastime of Krishna. The Lord steals Rukmini Harana. And Balaram actually goes to, not that Lord Krishna needed it, but he gets the army for Krishna. He goes to a place called Kundina, and he comes back, and he has the army ready for Krishna. So Krishna escapes with Rukmini, but then all the other soldiers are taken care of by the army. So this is one instance where Balaram does help Krishna to fight by supplying the army. But which was the other instance where Balaram did not help Krishna to fight? Kurukshetra, yes, he doesn't help at all, because he has equal allegiances. He has equal allegiances. He, he goes on pilgrimage. He goes on pilgrimage basically to avoid fighting, because there are so many that he knows. It was problem enough for Arjuna. Arjuna saw relatives that he knew and teachers that he knew. He didn't want to fight, and Krishna convinced him to fight. But with Balaram, he said, "No, I won't take part, because some people that they're too close to me." He had good friends and students also, and not that he needed to fight. So he goes traveling the holy places. In fact, Garga, in the Garga Samhita, we find that Duryodhan is he's very, very close. Very, very close to Balaram. Very intimately related to Balaram. So, at one point in his travels, Lord Balaram comes to the forest of Naimisharanya, and there he sees Romaharshan Sutta, all the sages are gathered because Kali Yuga is fast coming. A sage, being a sage, means you can see the future. And part of what you know about the future is that things don't get better, they get worse. You see? And because they get worse, we have to take great precautions. So, he goes to different places, and then he comes to Ramaharshan Sutta. And the sages are sitting there, and Ramaharshan Sutta, he's a Sutta, which means he's S-U-T-A. It means he's the product of a mixed marriage, which wasn't quite, a Brahmin has to be born from both a Brahmin mother and a Brahmin father. And if you're not, you're a mixed offspring, known as a Sutta. Sometimes they will let you in to particular sacrifices, and sometimes they won't. So in this particular case, Ramaharshan Sutta had been allowed to be the speaker. We just read this last part here. Lord Balaram visited the broad Bindu Saras Lake, Chitakupa, Sudarshan, Vishal, Brahmatirtha, Chakratirtha, and the eastward flowing Saraswati. He also went to all the holy places along the Yamuna and the Ganges, O Bharata. And then he came to the Naimisha forest, where great sages were performing an elaborate sacrifice. Recognizing the Lord upon his arrival, the sages who had been engaged in their sacrificial rituals for a long time greeted him properly by standing up, bowing down, and worshipping him. After being thus worshipped along with his entourage, the Lord accepted a seat of honor. Lord Balaram's wife was also with him. They were going traveling together. Then he noticed that Ramaharshan, Vyasadeva's disciple, had remained seated. Lord Balaram became extremely angry upon seeing how this member of the Sutta caste had failed to stand up, bow down, or join his palms, and also how he was sitting above all the learned brahmanas. So the duty of a kshatriya is to protect civil order. And part of protecting civil order is that everybody has an identity in society. And they have their place and they have their role. So he was disturbed to see this. And then we read on. Lord Balaram said, because this fool born from an improperly mixed marriage sits above all these brahmanas, and even above me, the protector of religion, he deserves to die. Although he is a disciple of the divine sage Vyas and has thoroughly learned many scriptures from him, including the law books of religious duties and the epic histories and Puranas, all this study has not produced good qualities in him. Rather, his study of the scriptures is like an actor studying his part. For he is not self-controlled or humble and vainly presumes himself a scholarly authority, though he has failed to conquer his own mind. The very purpose of my descent into this world is to kill such hypocrites who pretend to be religious. Indeed, they are the most sinful rascals. It seems very extreme, doesn't it, for a person who doesn't want to fight at Kurukshetra because he doesn't want to take part in killing friends and family members. But here he is, he's in Naimisharanya, and these religious people who are about to hear a discourse from this person, Ramaharshan Sutta, and he becomes the most annoyed that he can be. And therefore he prescribes the greatest level of punishment. That is because religion, when it goes wrong, and religious leaders, when they go wrong, can do the greatest amount of damage in society. Provided, of course, that people are still keen enough to follow religious leaders. And therefore, the kshatriya's duty was to make sure that the Brahmins were very much on track, and therefore that they were self-realized. Prabhupada tells a story of the Greek Alexander the Great, and Diogenes or Diogenes, who lived outside Athens in a barrel. And after Alexander the Great, with the advice of his guru figure, Diogenes, had conquered so many places, he came back and he said, "Look, I have to thank you. I have to give you some dakshina. I can give you countries, or at least cities, chariots, horses, princesses. What can I give you?" And Diogenes, who was living in this big wine barrel, he looked at him and he said, "Yes, there's one thing you can give me." He said, "Yes, what can I do for you?" He said, "You can stand out of the way of the sunshine. You're blocking the sun." And Prabhupada told that story, and he said that this Diogenes is self-realized. He's been given the opportunity to have so much, but all he wants is just a little warmth of the sun on him. He says, so this is a relationship between the Kshatriya and the Brahmin. Brahmin, he doesn't live in the palace. He lives, you know, he lives a life of poverty so that he can stay renounced. He can stay detached. And the Kshatriya may give him everything or promise to give him everything, but he doesn't. So here was the opposite situation. Here was the Romaharshan Suta who had become really like a bit of a lord. And normally you get off your seat to welcome someone. This is one sign of humility. When the Celtic Christians were meeting the Roman Christians near York, the Celtic Christians thought to themselves, "Let us see whether they have humility." So the Celtic Christians, they bowed down to the Christians from the Roman Empire. And the Roman Christians simply stood standing. And the Celtic Christians knew at this point we're going to lose. We're going to lose, not because we lack humility, but because they're going to be very difficult. So, and in other places, Prabhupada says you can have the accoutrement, you can have the externals of a religious person. You can have the robes, or in our case, the facial markings. But if you do not have the qualities, the character that is developed, chief of which is humility and detachment and a certain self-realization, he said, then you have the apparent religiosity without spirituality. And this is not required. It's not required. So here, he leans forward, and he leans forward, and he just touches Roha Maharshan Suta. There's no mace involved, there's no fisticuffs, and it's just, he touches him with the kusha grass. Not just the kusha grass, but the tip of the kusha grass. Now, kusha grass, as every Brahmin knows, is the grass that comes from the shaking of the hair of Lord Varaha, and the drops of water from the ocean. They fly onto the surface of the earth and grow up as kusha grass. And this kusha grass is permanently pure, and it's used by Brahmins to purify even an impure place. And for some types of Brahmins, you don't do any type of sacrifice without kusha or darbha. So here, with the very instrument of Brahminism, Baladev kills Roha Maharshan Suta. The very thing that would purify him purifies him, but in a way that he didn't expect. So then all the sages cry, "Alas, alas," in great distress. And they told Lord Sankarshan, "O Master, you have committed an irreligious act. You see, O favorite of the Yadus, we gave him the seat of the spiritual master and promised him long life and freedom from physical pain for as long as the sacrifice continues. You have unknowingly killed a Brahmin. Of course, even the injunctions of revealed scriptures cannot dictate to you, the Lord of all mystic power, but if by your own free will you nonetheless carry out the prescribed purification for the slaying of a Brahmin, O purifier of the whole world, people in general will greatly benefit by your example." So Lord Balaram then promises, "Yes, I will. I will make it up. I will perform some activities." So then they said, "Well, seeing as you're good at removing demons, there is this person who comes and urinates on our fire. And he scatters, you know, blood and feces and pus. And, you know, you could, you know, use your prowess to remove him. And then we can get on with our peaceful sacrifices. When you do the fire sacrifice, the first thing is you take a pinch and you throw it away and you say, Om Nirasta Paravasu, I cast out the impurities that may be here. So you become pure. So before the sacrifice of the age of Kali could take place, the sacrifice that would purify the age of Kali that the sages wanted to perform, the impurities. And what was the impurity? What is the impurity for the age of Kali? When non-religious people become religious leaders. When people who have violence in their heart become the symbols of peace, of God's love. Then, when those who are no better than sudras, or at best merchants, become the directors of human society. When kshatriyas, who are meant to protect the citizens, stand idly by. And everything becomes topsy-turvy. When the Brahmins are not Brahmins, when the kshatriyas are not kshatriyas, when the Vaishyas are not really looking after your money, and when the Sudras are not serving anybody else, you see. So this is Kali Yuga, and it just keeps on going. So Balaram, in one place, Garga Muni says that Duryodhan is none other than Kali, and Kali is a follower of Lord Balaram. So the personification of the age of Kali is a disciple of Balaram and serves him to increase Kali's business so that the purifying agency can come. Everything is required. Kali Yuga is also a plan of the Lord. Don't think that Satya Yuga was planned by Krishna, but Kali Yuga somehow isn't, you know. That's like saying spring, summer, and autumn is arranged by Krishna, but winter, Krishna's so sweet, he wouldn't have arranged winter. No, Krishna arranges winter so that spring can come. That's the whole point. It's your misfortune that it's taken you thousands and thousands and thousands of lifetimes that we're still here in Kali Yuga. But one good thing, being alive in Kali Yuga, is that the Sankirtan mission of Nityananda Prabhu, who is none other than Balaram, who prayed for Jagayan Madai, who actually protected them from the wrath of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were very fortunate. And Nityananda expands as the guru whom we take shelter of, who gives us instructions how we can go back home, who explains how the plow of Krishna can give way to the flute, the plow of Balaram can give way to the flute of Krishna. So in this way, Balaram misses the entire battle of Kurukshetra, but he only comes back once. He comes back once when there's a big fight going on. It's a big mace fight. Who was that between? Bhima and Duryodhan. And he comes back. And of course, another name for Balaram is Duryodhan Guru. Duryodhan Guru. Why? Because he's the guru of Duryodhan. So he teaches him how to fight the mace. Now, you know that, you know, he didn't want, you know, Bhima is very powerful. Duryodhan's very powerful. Bhima is expert with the mace. Duryodhan's. And so Balaram tried to convince both of them to stop. And his basic argument was that one of you is going to win and one of you is going to lose. And whichever of you loses, I'm going to be unhappy. Duryodhan, you're my student. I've taught you everything you know. Bhima, you're my friend. Please, you know, we've grown up together. Don't fight. But by that time, they were locked. And none other than Krishna himself was causing both Bhima and Duryodhana to fight. So Balaram, He wants them not to fight, but Krishna wants them to fight. So who wins? Krishna. Krishna's will. Krishna's will. So they fight, and the rest is history. So then, on this day, on the day of Balaram's appearance day, we pray that Balaram will be very instrumental in the fight that goes on in our own hearts. It is symbolic, but at the same time, it's very personal. Because Balaram is actually one of great compassion. And just as we wish to approach Lord Krishna through his intermediary, Lord Balaram accepts our requests to approach Krishna through him. So traditionally on Balaram's appearance day, we request, we make a list of all the good things that we want to have removed from our heart. And you can just look at the standard lists, and statistically you will have at least a few of those. And you pray to the Lord, "My dear Lord, please, on this day, your appearance day, I'm fasting, I'm performing this great vrat until the clock strikes 12. It's, you know, this is so, but I'm doing it for you. And because I'm doing it for you, I ask that you give me a small reward. And please uproot from my heart the same way as you removed Denukasura, the same way as you removed Pralamba, the same way as you removed your opponents during the chess match, Rukmi and all the other laughing people, the same way as you killed Dvivida Gorilla, the same way as you got rid of Romaharshan Sutta. Please, this day, protect me by uprooting all these sinful things in my heart and make me a greater devotee." This is one nice way to pray today. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. May God, in all his various manifestations, bless you all. Hare Krishna.